Thank you for tuning in to Hacks and Hobbies with your host, Junaid. We're visited by our amazing guests coming from all walks of life. We want to learn their story, their struggles, and their journey on how they got to where they are today. So stick around. Everyone says you need to tell your story, but few people ever tell you how. My guest today, Lefteris Lefty Kutinas, is not just a storyteller. He's a filmmaker who's on a mission to help entrepreneurs build worlds that outlive algorithms. And if you've ever felt trapped in short-form content chaos, guess what I have? This episode is your permission slip to start creating like a legend. By the end of this episode, you'll understand what makes a story truly cinematic and how to take your brand from the phone screen to the big screen. Lefty's about to show us how storytelling becomes legacy. Lefty Kutinas is a 10-time award-winning filmmaker and branding strategist from Toronto who helps entrepreneurs craft stories that stand the test of time. His tribe isn't hustling for likes, they're building worlds. Lefty, welcome to Hacks and Hobbies. So awesome to have you here.
Oh, thank you for having me. I've been like itching for this moment, just waiting for October to come to its end so I can be here.
I know, right? It's been a long journey. We've known each other for quite some time, and your filmmaking skills and my filmmaking background, I was like, hey, we are two brothers made from the same cloth. I've got a little clapper magnet right here.
Oh, I love that.
Right. I love that. Because again, filmmaking is so powerful. Storytelling is so powerful. And it totally takes the person along for a journey. That's why we watch so many TV shows and movies and whatnot. But let's go back to the beginning. Before the camera, before the awards, what first drew you into storytelling?
Honestly, man, wrestling, WWE. I was, you know, just like most European parents back in the 90s, we had those like jailbroken satellite dishes. I got you pay-per-view and whatnot, if you remember that. And it was a school night. I'm flipping through channels, and I think it was all of a sudden I see this car chase happening. And then these two guys, like larger than life kind of characters, get out of the car and they just start beating the crap out of each other. And right away I was glued. I think I was like 9 years old or 10 years. About 9 years old. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, what is this? It's like 10:30 at night. I should be in bed. I got school tomorrow. My mom's kind of yelling at me. And that was my outside of like going to the movies, because obviously, you know, before that I've seen Jurassic Park and I've seen all the stuff that came out, but that was my first introduction to what the WWE calls a cinematic match. And just like watching it all unfold, and I was like, oh man, this is really cool. And then, you know, just from there I got hooked. I got like really excited to you know, find what other channels were hosting the events. And, you know, I ended up falling in love with guys like Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, The Undertaker, Ultimate Warrior. And I just started following their journeys. And I just realized that it wasn't, you know, I wasn't really following Undertaker. I was following like a real life horror movie, or like, I wasn't following, you know, Shawn Michaels. I was following like an industry disruptor. And they had all these like different storylines weaving this bigger universe. I'm 39 now, so I'm still a fan. I still, if you want to call it, watch it religiously. And you know, it's had its ups and downs, and sometimes I am bored of the stories, but yeah, that's my first taste of like real true storytelling outside of like the movie theater.
So that's really powerful, because as you're mentioning WWE, I remember growing up when I was in my, 9, 10 years old, I remember my parents, they used to watch some kind of wrestling, and I remember the legends, right? Hulk Hogan, mm-hmm. recently passed. Did he pass away? Can't remember.
Yes.
Okay. Hulk Hogan, there was Andre the Giant, like all of these old names, we used to watch them. And it was really cool. There wasn't much storytelling, I was a lot younger, so I didn't really follow it from that perspective, but the destruction or the fights that they would do, tag people in, that was really interesting to watch. In fact, I might have to connect you with my good friend J.R. Sparrow, who is a huge WWE fan. He, he's works closer with their podcast and whatnot. So I think there might be a connection there.
Sweet.
But Lefty, you've said before that your goal is to tell 1,000 stories. Was that really, what does that mission really mean to you?
I mean, at the end of the day, we are all connected through stories. There's a huge difference between storytelling and telling mm-hmm. a story. But we all have a story within us because we all, go through different experiences and we all, whether we find it through religion or any other ways of like finding identity, it's like that journey of self-discovery and identity is so powerful and impactful that to me, leaving that story and getting to understand who the people that are here now that are not going to be here 100 years from now, getting to know our lives, right? Like imagine if it wasn't, we got to know nothing or nothing was documented about even like World War II or World War I. We wouldn't know these big names, whether they were like, tyrants and crazy people and whatnot, but even the nut jobs of the world shaped our society, right? Yes, and like we need to know those stories, may it be for good or evil. And I think that is, I kind of feel like that's where I come in. Like I feel like we should all have an opportunity to kind of like share everything that we've been through in life. And the whole mission of 1,000 was giving myself a number that was just like, I know is unrealistic.
Yeah.
The average project takes anywhere from, 3 months all the way to like 18 months and longer. Mm-hmm. So when I really sat back with it and, me being 39 now and I'm just guesstimating and I'm like, let's say I have another 40 years on this planet. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no way I can tell 1,000 stories.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where I made the shift of like not only doing it practically where I'm doing the production for the people that I'm going to be working with, but I also opened up an online community called the Persona Club, which allowed me to get people to kind of go through kind of like a do it yourself, but do it with you kind of journey.
Sure.
And I think that's where it's going to help me kind of hit that 1,000 story goal. I'm really looking forward to reaching a goal that is, that I still find to be completely unrealistic. And, sometimes I live in a fantasy world. I tell stories for a living. So, I mean, being unrealistic is normal in my world.
Mm-hmm. I love that because, it is, sure, it might not be possible for you to tell 1,000 stories in the next 40 years, but with the advent of AI, you could tell a new story literally every week, and maybe in 1,000 weeks, you could tell 1,000 stories. I don't know. I'm just looking at number crunching and what's really possible, because as a parent, I'm coming up with new stories for my children all the time, right? And they're ability to stay to that story and, have this new world that we're creating around is really, I think it's really personable, right? You can then go back to these stories and you can go back to these connections at a later time and you know, talk about these things. Like, for example, we come up with, there's a song, I don't know if you probably heard it or not, it's called Chicken Banana. Have you heard that song
yet? Yeah.
All right, so we have a banana plant, which is like not an actual banana plant, but it's called a banana plant. So we added plant to that chicken banana song. So chicken banana plant. So it's like a, you know, it's like a bounce or a bass kick kind of thing. Yeah. And we talk about, we curated this funny story between me and my 3-year-old. And then, you know, we talk about it. So it's really easy to relate and bring together an understanding of the power of stories. Now, going back to, you know, telling stories to my son, do you remember the first time that you realized a story could move people or change how they saw you?
That's a great question. I've never been asked that before. I think the first way that I figured out that a story could move somebody, I think it was when I saw Michael Keaton's Batman, because it was just more so a matter of like how it made me feel. Like, you know, there were times where, you know, I got sad, and then there was times where I got excited, and then there was times where I got, you know, angry when like the Joker was winning, for example. Yeah. And then in terms of like real movement, I think what made my storytelling really be more powerful than what it is because in story, we have two things happening at once, which is we have verbal communication, which is the dialogue that the actor, for example, is like speaking.
Yeah.
And then we have what's more important than the dialogue, which is the nonverbal communication. It's the actions. It's all the stuff between the dialogue and the monologues that make it come to life. And I think being a DJ and a touring DJ for 20 years, I can only move people through nonverbal communication, through how I wore my hair, through how I danced and moved on stage from song to song that I was playing and kind of taking you on that kind of journey. And then I think where it really became powerful was understanding how I could manipulate. And I know manipulate is like a really aggressive and kind of negative word, but it was really manipulation through music. Like knowing that I can move you in any which way, shape, and form at any given moment. That's when I really saw movement at its finest through nonverbal storytelling. And I just did everything that I could to bring that to my films and my documentaries and the short limited series that I do. And yeah, I mean, that's kind of the journey that I'm on right now is like, I know that all stories are subjective. I know that all art is subjective, but it's finding what works best for me and still being on that journey to be able to provide the best audiovisual experience for my audience.
Dude, that's really,
and for theirs.
Yeah. And for theirs as well, right? So not only your audience, but also their audience, because they need to connect with their audience on a deeper level. And Lefty, that's really powerful because most people think of storytelling as content. But for you, it's transformation. It's the feeling that you're delivering through the sounds and the music and the visualization and all that. All those things that encompass that movie or documentary that you might be building. Therefore, let's dig into how you help entrepreneurs see themselves differently before they ever hit record. Because we all see ourselves as, oh my God, who am I? Why do I even need to share this story? Like, how can my story affect somebody else?
Yeah. Yeah. So I like to call it main character energy. We all are main characters in our own universes.
Yeah.
You know, your wife, your kids, your clients, your parents, cousins, those people I look at as those are supporting cast, right?
Yeah.
They still play there. There's other people that play main character roles, but they're the supporting cast within your universe. And when you can start thinking of, you know, it's not just, you know, Lefty waking up in the morning and going to put on a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
It's really like Lefty gets out of bed in the morning. He feels a small breeze under his feet, walks to the kitchen as like the sun shines through and that golden hue of the sun. Like I really like look at the world as a movie.
Yeah.
And I try and put myself in that position as the main character. I don't really just live life and I'm like, okay, I'm going to step off out of bed. I'm going to groggily walk over, right, you know, be all groggy and walk to the kitchen, push the button. Like I really try and put myself in that. And like, I guess I always try and put myself in a cinematic situation.
Yeah.
Even if I'm just doing the most mundane task, and that's kind of like what you have to do. You have to think about who your character is, and you have to think of who they are as a person, the things that they do, the things that they like, the things that they don't like,
yeah,
the things that they find funny, that they don't find funny, and really just, you know, build out that universe, right? J.K. Rowling wouldn't have, you know, as big of a universe for Harry Potter if Harry Potter was just the regular dude who woke up in the morning and pushed the button for coffee.
That's right.
Right?
That's right. Yeah.
So that's kind of how you have to look at it. And some people live in a comedy, some people live in a drama, some people unfortunately live in a thriller. Mm-hmm. Like it really just, you know, try and kind of envision yourself in that bigger universe. And in order to do that too, you have to think outside of the bubble of social media.
Yes.
And for example, I don't know if many people noticed this, but this was something that I kind of like started to realize where I was like, huh, that's a funny coincidence.
Mm-hmm.
If you're somebody that watches YouTube on your television rather than your mobile phone, and then you pull up Netflix and you put both home pages side by side, YouTube is actually starting to look like Netflix's home page.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I started to realize like, yo, like this isn't about content anymore. Like when you're on like a platform like YouTube, you're not competing with the guy on Instagram or the girl on TikTok.
Not at all.
You're competing with Stranger Things. You're competing with Game of Thrones. Like
exactly.
Like the attention economy, if you do it correctly and you build that world, it can be massive.
Yeah.
And I guess like what I bring to people is having them think outside the box, like really think outside the box.
Dude, you're hitting on a really powerful point, because data showed from earlier this year here in 2025, YouTube accounts for 1 billion hours of television time on YouTube alone every single day.
Number one streaming platform.
Right, number one streaming platform. And what are people watching on YouTube? They're watching TV shows, like fully produced TV shows, especially from Pakistan and India and like all these other countries. Their main distribution platform is YouTube, because they know their people are going to get to their content and they are monetized. Not only that, people are consuming podcast episodes on television as well. So why not tell a high-end story? And why Netflix has recently just signed a deal with Spotify to bring their top podcast to Netflix.
Oh, wow.
So
interesting.
The worlds are colliding. The content gap is shortening. But there's something that you talked about. You talk about escaping the short form trap. I'm in that trap right now because I get a ton of views. But are the people staying, right? So talk to me, what's the danger of chasing quick content wins?
The real danger behind the quick wins is that, you know, it's, so I broke it down like this, because Google came out with this article that pretty much said that somebody has to spend 7 hours with you over 11 touch points and all these other numbers that they came out with. Mm-hmm. Now, let's forget the 11 touch points for a second, and let's specifically talk about the 7 hours.
Yes.
Right? So if somebody needs to spend 7 hours with me in order to buy from me, if you're creating 30-second videos, that actually equates to just over like 830 30-second videos. Now, that also means that you have to have a 100% viewership rate,
mm-hmm.
which is never going to happen,
gonna case.
Because everyone's just going to scroll, and it's a roulette table or a slot machine,
yeah.
hoping that your video is going to once again pop into the algorithm, and you're not really building connection. You're just kind of giving people like a way to just fast food. It's just really eating fast food, right?
It's exactly what I call it. It's fast food. It's like popcorn. It's like chips. You know, you go back for more. You switch and get some more. And to get more, you just swipe to the next story or the next video.
Yeah. So I mean, there's a thing that I kind of like to do where, again, I don't use much short form content. Like if I'm going to make a short form video, it will be on YouTube Shorts, just because I've completely like left Instagram. Mm-hmm. Like I'll put up my film photography, for example, just because I still want a place to put my photos.
Yeah.
But yeah, Instagram is gone. I haven't used TikTok in like probably 8 months.
Sure.
So if I was to put out a YouTube short, it would be something that like I really need to say, and it just has to be quick. It cannot be overly produced. But furthermore, to build the connection, I've been using YouTube Shorts as my video trailers.
Perfect. That's what they're supposed
to
be.
So instead of like, so that way I can at least like funnel people back to the long form content. Mm-hmm. I'm not just making a random short form video.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's pretty much just kind of how I've been doing it. And sometimes that means that I might have to have a secondary script for a trailer.
Sure.
Or that sometimes means that I've written the longer form script in a way that I can break it down into like a 30-second or 60-second little video mm-hmm. that I can throw up on Shorts, but it's literally meant to be as literally just a trailer. Like,
yep.
And you know, if you really want the definition of like a movie trailer, for those people that kind of get the idea, is like the trailer, we keep watching these until the film comes out and then we rush to the movies.
That's right.
Right. But imagine not having to wait for the film to come out because it's already on your YouTube channel mm-hmm. and you can literally get people to rush over to the long form.
Yeah.
It's still a small percentage of like short form conversions to long form, but you know, even if you can get like 1 to 10 people to kind of jump ship and look at your long form stuff, it's still a win.
Dude, you're so right. You're so right, because those trailers really do come in clutch, because they bring in the attention, they bring in the people to go watch the full movie. And sometimes these trailers are so overproduced, it's almost like you've seen the whole movie just by watching the trailer. But I love that, you know, with short form content leading to long form content is where it's at. Now,
yeah, I think people just have to stop like using it as like junk food
to go to.
But
exactly.
At the same time, if you are even if you only stick to short form, I just feel like you're always going to be running the rat race.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't do, you any good,
No.
because while you're stuck constantly having to create, there's somebody out there making the tens and thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars that you're truly missing out on, because you're constantly thinking the next video will do, the next video will do. And you're just, yeah, you're just stuck.
You're
You're
just
just,
stuck in there. You're just stuck in that loop, right?
yeah,
And
the lotus flower. I even have it on my arm. I
that's
don't
right.
know.
So, Lefty, the camera doesn't lie and it amplifies whatever story you believe about yourself, right? And that's where your filmmaking background comes in. You've seen how lighting, sound, and framing can change everything. But what about when you're the one in front of the lens? Let's go there for a minute because like yourself, I was behind the camera for many, many years, and it took me a long time to get comfortable in front of the camera. So, when you're crafting a brand story, what do you look for first, the message, the visuals, or the emotion?
Yeah, so I mean, first things first, I always kind of start with music, just because music is what's really going to shape the story that I'm telling. I mean, this is after I've probably already scripted something,
Sure.
but then immediately after that, I'm going for music and sound effects first, and I kind of build out that library. And then once I have the library of like sounds and audio and all that, then I go and film.
Okay.
Now, the camera process and the lighting process, and I'm actually notorious for trying to go back to like natural lighting. It's very rare that you'll find me like on set with like all these crazy lighting rigs.
Sure.
That does not happen anymore. I've tried to like go back to like what God provides us, but even before that, I think what you have to think about is like the camera will determine the story that you're telling. The lenses, the lenses that you use will determine the story that you're telling, right? Like you can tell just as good of a story on an iPhone than you can on a $25,000 Sony Burano,
Oh, yes.
right? Or an $85,000 Alexa Mini, right? It really just depends on the story that you're telling. And even like at the end of the day, like the camera really doesn't even matter either. Like I think what makes the most important impact on the story are the lens choices,
Yeah.
right? Different lenses have, different focal lengths. They all have different characteristics. They all don't look the same. Like you can have a 28 millimeter lens, or let's just even say 50 millimeter lens, because our eyes actually see in a 50 millimeter focal length. So your eyes compared to my eyes compared to somebody who has blue eyes or green eyes, we're all seeing the world different,
Yeah.
right? People with lighter eyes tend to not like they tend to be more sensitive to light, where darker eyes, we see things a little bit more contrasty, right? So understanding what the story needs from like a lens standpoint and then choosing the camera, that's where people need to kind of like stop getting, fixated on needing the best gear all the time.
I love
Because
that.
again, like you can get away, like if you want to do a film, just all drone shots, go do a film with all drone shots. If you want to do a film that will be all walking shots, do walking, all tripod. I think what people miss is that they don't put rules on their projects. And when you put rules on your projects, where to say, I'm only going to shoot in this style, I'm only going to shoot this way, I'm only going to get this type of look and this type of atmosphere and whatnot, then you really start seeing a story come together. But when you're just like, let's go at it, balls to the wall.
Yeah.
Like, we're just gonna show up and whatever happens, happens.
Yeah.
Like, that's where things get a little tricky.
You gotta have constraints. You know, you gotta have that vision of what you're trying to create so that people feel that emotion that you're putting into the video. I got a couple more questions before we wrap up. What's one mistake most entrepreneurs make when they try to tell their story on camera?
You know, funny enough, I don't even think it's the story that they get wrong or it's a story that's the mistake. I think the biggest mistake that entrepreneurs make when telling a story is, you know, taking shortcuts with your videographer or your director. You know, what ends up like, what people don't understand or what people take, like, kind of take for granted is, you know, you hire a guy who might be a little on the more expensive side, but is getting exactly what you want. And then all of a sudden you might have not the greatest month, or you might have to eat the cost the second month. So you would rather go and hire someone from like Fiverr. You would rather hire like your cousin's kid from like a couple blocks down. And now the story changes and because it's two different cinematic styles, right? You don't have like, you know, imagine you have Spielberg directing Jaws, and then all of a sudden, a quarter of the way through the film, Michael Bay comes in and goes, bro, sit, I got this. We're going to start getting a completely different film, and we're going to get a completely different story.
Yes.
And then imagine like James Cameron producing Avatar 1, and then all of a sudden they hire Martin Scorsese for Avatar 2. Again, we're going to get two completely different films, two completely different stories.
Yes, we will.
So I think the biggest problem in the storytelling is that entrepreneurs, even with AI and even with someone trying to undermine a professional director's prices, I think taking the shortcuts is actually what's killing the story. It's not the story itself. Because when you start looking at your content as like episodic seasons of like a television show, you need to continue having that one director. You could very well be the director. Like, you don't necessarily have to hire somebody to do the work for you.
Right.
But understand that if you are the director, you need to continue sticking to that same visual style, and you have to keep a specific look and feel and pace to your videos and to your projects. And if you feel like you're somebody that can't do that, then eat the cost for a little bit if you absolutely must, and go hire a director who is going to keep you on pace and is going to make sure that your story feels, looks, and works in a sequential format.
Yeah. What I'm hearing, Lefty, is that the real story starts long before the camera rolls in, right? It's the person. Like, how much work have you done on yourself, on your storytelling ability, on you being the most authentic without faking it till you make it, right? You're doing it like you are. Like, for example, Gary Vee, when he started showing up on the scene, people told him, hey, if you dressed up in a suit and if you stopped cussing, you'd be invited to so many more stages to speak.
Yeah.
It's like, no, that's not me. I don't need to do that, right? And now literally everybody is mimicking, copying, because what he's saying is, and what you're telling me here, is you got to have a cohesive story shot from the same lens, shot from the same perspective, so that it makes sense. And that's why bringing someone of your caliber to shoot the documentary or story is going to give you that cohesive look and feel throughout the story, as opposed to mishmash of different video platforms put together. I totally love it, man. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. I mean, like I've literally had people, you know, pay me, you know, like mid-tier five-figure salaries for a film. And I've told them straight up, like, I don't care if we're in pre-production for like a year. Like, I will physically not show up on set if we don't get this right.
Yeah.
Like, so the quicker you want to work with me and the quicker you want to like make this story happen, the quicker I will show up. But like I'm not going to come if we don't have all this ready first.
Right, exactly.
I mean, obviously, like, you know, a part of it has to do with timing too, but at the end of the day, I don't ever want to be on set and I don't ever want to think. I want to know that we're very intentional with what it is that we're showcasing and sharing.
Absolutely. Well, Lefty, thank you so much. You know, in part two, we're going to be diving deeper into how to actually live that story, how to use your life, your craft, and even your hobbies to fuel the narrative that builds your brand. Lefty, this has been absolutely incredible. I love that you remind us stories aren't invented, they're revealed. For everyone listening, make sure to tune in for part two of this conversation. Lefty, where can people connect with you and learn more about what you do?
Yeah, currently you can find me on Facebook with my name, Leftedis Kutinas, and it is the same on YouTube, Leftedis Kutinas. Or if you want to make things easier to find me on YouTube, just type in my big fat origin story and I'm sure I will pop up.
I love that. We'll be sure to include all of the links in the show notes so folks can get to you and connect with you. Thank you so much again, Lefty.
Thank you.
Guys, for everyone listening, make sure you tune in to part two of this conversation because we're going behind the lens to explore how to start living your story, not just telling it. Thanks again, and we'll see you in the next episode. Congratulations, you made it to the end of the episode. Thanks so much for listening to our guest on this episode. Please send me an email at Junaid@hacksandhobbies.com to tell me what you loved about our guest today. You could find links mentioned in this episode on the hacksandhobbies.com website.